Okay, Murders in the Rue Castro. Good. This is it's not too late to read you a story by Ezekiel J. Kralin, who lives in San Francisco, and he's probably listening even now as I speak, because he has a Wi-Fi gizmo in his window. He can get Wi-Fi from the coffee shop downstairs and across the street. He calls when I'm in Fort Bragg. He calls there and reads his story by himself. And let me just see how much is here. That's not that long. I thought it was going to be longer. That's not too long at all. Ezekiel J. Kralin writes two stories, Murders in the Rue Castro and Mr. Akbar's Demise, both of them written in 2002. Ezekiel J. Kralin wrote, "The following letter I sent to various gay media outlets, including San Francisco's BAR, I also emailed it to several mainstream newspapers and gay and activist internet news groups. Begin letter. October 12, 2002. Dear editor, the Castro has suffered a recent spate of violent deaths in a short period, all directly linked to homeless people or, quote, drifters, who are also quite homophobic, though some hide it well. Oh, about 4 months ago, a gay cop died in the line of duty and another severely brain-damaged in pursuit of a violent felon attempting to find sanctuary here in the Castro. His name was Monty, and he had just left his girlfriend, beaten within an inch of her life, one eye gouged out. Prior to this incident, Monty had been a long-term vagrant of the Castro, intimidating other decent folks, both houseless and housed, throughout our valley. Fortunately, he was apprehended in the chase, but what a horrid price to pay for such worthless trash. Two brave young police attempting to protect our gay community from this monster paid the ultimate price. My heart goes out to them and all their comrades in blue. And a few weeks ago, a long-term and friendly regular at the popular neighborhood bar, the Pendulum, was brutally murdered by another who frequented that place and had built up a circle of trust among local residents. Let me say this about the Pendulum. It's a great place with very friendly and community-supportive, culturally diverse bartenders, and for the most part, a great crowd hangs there throughout the day. I invite everyone to show their support by spending some time and money there. The good folks of the Pendulum certainly deserve a boost of positive support after that shocking murder of a favorite customer, but do I hear them whining? No way. They're such great soldiers. And just a few days ago, a crazed street person screaming faggot and wielding two butcher knives in and around the Baghdad Cafe was shot just as he lunged at an armed officer of the law. See Mr. Akbar's Demise for my take on this tragedy. I'll read that to you when I'm finished with this story. And I also see that these deaths are the likely outcome of years of our neighborhood having to put up with violent ex-cons and drug-crazed bullies lurking our streets at all times of the day and night. In my examples above, one's African-American, one's Caucasian, another's Arab-American, perhaps, so race has little, if anything, to do with it. For the above incidents are examples of the most dangerous among the street denizens in the Castro, as those who live and frequent this area know too well. These streets are overrun with a whole crowd of very nasty, homophobic thugs and their cohorts, and I know who they are. I even know a few who are 100% homosexual, yet in public act out as if they're totally straight, strutting around with bowed legs to prove this to the world, in order to defend themselves from possible attacks from other bullies of their peer. They don't want their secret known. No, not even here in the Castro, the heart of gay Mecca. There are some decent street folk, and I know them too, and they suffer constantly from threats by these thugs and are driven out or live in fearful truce, also terrorized by these criminals or our own gay houseless who must acquiesce to these hetero-supremacist bullies, often going back into the closet to minimize the odds of being bashed. Imagine that. In our own gay areas, the gay homeless are still in danger of bashing because the streets themselves are very homophobic. And what's to stop hetero street trash from claiming they're bisexual in order to take up what few beds we can provide to our own sexual minority houseless? Nothing, because the law is biased against homosexual equality. I speak with familiarity on the homeless and gay issues because I've been an activist in our community since 1973 for sexual minorities, including those who are without any roof over their heads, and I was homeless myself for a time, 1973 through 1974. My history as an activist is laid out for the world to see via my writing and art at gay-bible.org. The queer papers know me well, as I've been sending letters to the editor since 1985 under my birth name, Jean Catalano, and in the last few years under my new name, legally changed, Zeke Kralin. Proof of name change can be easily found on my website. My intent was to reach out to my gay sisters and brothers on the Castro streets to advocate for them. But so many heteros, most clueless about gay rights, some hostile, among our local straight people, have made it impossible for me to freely seek out these gays as they remain in fear of being bashed, even in gay Mecca. And it's quite true, sad to say. I know of one gay homeless man who got on welfare and had to share a cruddy hotel room with a guy who turned out to be very homophobic and beat him up. The social services ignored his plea for help, so he dropped out of the program and is now back on the streets. Streets which are every bit as anti-gay as a welfare hotel rife with homophobic vermin. I never thought things would come to this, being an advocate for the homeless and all, but our streets are truly dangerous for gay folk these days due to thugs overrunning our sidewalks and parks. But this is not a homeless issue. It is a street issue, a behavior issue. For some of these thugs do have homes, and some housed, often affluent, gays do sell, buy, and partake hard drugs with some homeless. The situation is so tragic at this point that our community is under siege by bratty monsters strutting our neighborhood like they own it, because, goddammit, they're straight, hence superior to the friggin' faggots around here. So even though I have houseless friends, I must stand with those good people who are fed up with this homophobic crap terrorizing us in our own neighborhood and join them in flushing any and all street thugs out of our once safe community. I may be a homeless advocate, but I sure as hell am not a bullshit advocate, and that's what these thugs are, the dregs of humanity who, for the, quote, good fortune of a corrupt legal system releasing them to the public prematurely without warning or protection, have insinuated themselves into our queer community. Why? Because that's where desperate thugs run to when they're in serious trouble again. Like Monty, who gouged out his battered girlfriend's eye. Quote, I'll hide out in the Castro, shack up with some rich fag, maybe bash him or some others, and rape a homeless bitch while I'm at it. End quote. You should know that the state prison system releases most prisoners to either Los Angeles, Sacramento, or San Francisco. And they all know the Castro, much to my alarm. Likewise, West Hollywood. When a society ignores the homeless issue, this is what we finally wind up with. Wonderful neighborhoods in all the major cities and towns overrun with undesirables or unloved homeless vagrants, and many gravitate to gay communities for the intrinsic homophobia of the legal system sees fit to create holding cells for these outcasts in gay neighborhoods, and this social disease that rages on called homophobia infects most of the homeless who find their way here. For that is the baggage they took with them from their hometown. It is their God-given duty to harass and beat us even when we offer them our food, clothes, money, and other hospitality. They are like perfect brainwashed puppets of the religious Reich, sent to create mayhem and dissent within gay communities in order to sabotage their progress. Talk about cheap, expendable mercenaries. I blame the rise of our government's anti-gay religious Reich into power right up to the White House. They call the Taliban faggots, thus exacerbating the hatred against our gay citizens. They deem us unworthy of fighting for our nation or of raising a family, or giving blood to our soldiers. They whip up fear and disgust against us. And President Clinton did us no big favor when he signed DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, in 1996, which as good as proclaims that we gays are an imminent threat to American heterofamily values. This act empowered the Republican Reich to point their finger at Clinton and say, see, your own liberal president of the Democratic Party even agrees with us about you faggots. Then point to gays as the cause of all social ills, rising to such heights of absurdity as to blame us for 9/11. It is this rising pitch in anti-gay sentiment that is creating these ugly street scenes and murders across our sorry nation, and even into the heart of our own sexual minority neighborhoods. We have a dumbed-down populace with an itch to bash gays. And that is why statistics show a rapid rise each year in anti-gay violence since DOMA, and even more so since W's usurpation of our ailing democracy. But there are ways to convert these jarheads to our side of the war, just as their home folk put the fear of God into them, with anti-gay attitude being a big part of it. We can put the fear of the lawnmower man in them to get them to protect our neighborhood from other rough types. Lawnmower man. Granted, it's preferable to do away with jarheads completely, but as long as we're stuck with their presence amid our community, we need to make them work for us to make our neighborhood safer. We can turn the jarheads against those more dangerous, cunning street thugs who keep the homophobic flames burning in the streets. We can also reach out to the smaller number of decent houseless, especially sexual minorities, to both protect them from these hostile vagrants as well as to assist us in forming an effective neighborhood watch. We can work with the good homeless, and I'll even participate in the selection, who know very well all the dangerous types that have trashed and terrorized our streets for much too long, and some of whom are pretty big guys themselves. But I feel the situation of anti-gay thugs is so urgent, I'd have no qualms with helping to flush out all of the homeless if that's the only way our community at large wants to do it. In fact, I already have some of my street friends watching my back because another bully has been harassing and stalking me for over 2 months now. Unfortunately, he is also gay, which goes to show that we can't assume someone is decent just because he or she is queer. He's a long-term houseless vagrant in the Castro who screams and bullies a lot of folks. Name of Dane. Unfortunately, I am more often a target of hate from the streets, since I am part of the street counterculture myself, very adamant about maintaining gay turf and gay presence in the streets of the Castro. I'm willing to take a risk on my own well-being by posting this letter to gay papers and internet news groups, for I know some of my street enemies watch my every move. And know I am going for the jugular this time around. Jugular. And I don't at present have another place to stay in the city until the dust settles in the Castro where I live. Guess I'll just have to grin and bear it and carry pepper spray and put on my steel toes before stepping out. I am not the only queer fed up with constant harassment by nasty vagrants and ineffectual legal action that could discourage these idiots from such horrid behavior in the first place. We must develop a perfectly legal method that is also effective, all capital letters, effective, with or without the police, that uses peer pressure and other low-key strategies to drive the dangerous ones away. And I know we can do it, for the time is right, need is urgent, and I've met more than enough outraged Castro denizens and visitors to realize we won't lack in numbers or resources. We can approach the hostile ones as a group and suggest they leave. We can volunteer to hang out in groups at the hot spots in the neighborhood where thugs tend to congregate and make them feel quite unwelcome. And these are just two effective strategies, among others, that can be applied. But whether or not the community likes my idea of seeking out the decent homeless to join this effort remains to be seen. Either way, I am now totally devoted to inspiring an overwhelming desire by these heterocentric thugs to leave the vicinity of our queer community ASAP, which is all of San Francisco, as far as I'm concerned. Hey, make that all of Northern California. I am gay. I was homeless. My soulmate was a cop. So I have a heart for all these groups. But in this matter of street thugs, I must side with those who are sick of what they define as the homeless. The threat of anti-queer violence is just way too out of hand for us to afford much compassion for houseless people in our long-suffering neighborhood. Daily, I see crazed fools acting out in violent gestures, often with clubs, sticks, or some other wieldy weapon, up and down Market Street, or 17th, or Castro, or 18th, and you tell me that the police can't do anything about this, can't take away their weapons, can't be arrested in order to discourage such unruly behavior? Is there perhaps a wish among some in City Hall to let the street thugs harass the faggot neighborhoods? Because I don't see our straight hoods having much trouble keeping the bottom dwellers away. The hypocrisy of gay Mecca in pretending there isn't much homophobia still in our local institutions of government, education, and medicine is also to blame. Gays can barely be safe in most areas of the city without the risk of imminent violence on their persons, and thus do not walk hand in hand or kiss in most of, quote, gay Mecca. A few years ago, a gay couple were shot, one to death, just for holding hands, walking down Haight Street. De Mayer played the homophobic card to help win his second term by advertising in local newspapers a photo of men in drag, sisters of perpetual indulgence, with a proclamation, "Do we really want these kinds of people running our city?" or something in that same vein. And on August 16, 1998, the Sunday Examiner/Chronicle printed a full-page anti-gay ad, page A22, titled "Toward a New National Discussion of Homosexuality," paid for by a Christian cult to the tune of a handsome $35,000. And for almost a decade now, our own local hate talk radio, KSFO, spews venomous slander at our sexual minorities round the clock, and the biggest offender remains, as always, one Michael Savage, though other hosts like, quote, Dr. Laura and Rush Limbaugh are no big fan of queers either. And guess what medium street folk use most often to get their news? Radio. Guess which station has the most listeners? KSFO. I have encountered various houseless, literally parroting the hateful anti-queer diatribes of these paid goons for the religious Reich here in our own gay community. Sadly, the twisted sensationalism of KSFO sells better than honest, quality news coverage and discussion, which you will find at KGO. Well, not anymore, though, but this was written in 2002, just to remind you. Now we have anti-gay violence and murders all around the same time. The Castro, West Hollywood, mayor of Paris, the prime minister candidate of the Netherlands, etc. The trend is nationwide and global. Thus, these eruptions mark but the beginning of an awful trend, a trend which, however, I believe will inspire our gay family across the world to rise up and fight back and finally gain our desired victory, capital D, capital V. I remember years ago, mid-1970s, a political cartoon in some gay newspapers that depicted a giant labeled gay rights beginning to wake up from a long slumber, breaking the cords of anti-gay bigotry that have been holding him down. The caption went something like, "The sleeping giant will someday awaken." Well, I have not the slightest doubt that that someday has finally arrived. I hang at the pendulum most every day, ready to serve as a community ear and coordinator in matters of our right to live in reasonable peace and safety. Not just in our own hood, but in this country, which is supposed to protect legitimate minorities from the tyranny of majority coercion. I intend to see that it does, down to my last breath, if need be. One final thought. Perhaps the latest crimes are a warning to thugs. Act out in violent, suggestive manners, or scream faggot in our hood, and maybe someone will just up and shoot you, like a cop did on Monday night, October 8th, in front of Baghdad Cafe. That officer has all the positive support I can muster to protect his career and hopefully win him an award and a beefy raise. Sincerely signed, Zeke Kralin. And another very short piece by the same Ezekiel Kralin, who he referred to this a little bit earlier in the thing I just read. This is titled "Mr. Akbar's Demise." Ezekiel Kralin wrote, "Dear BAR editor, I cannot disagree more with the surviving family and friends of one Mr. Jihad Abdul Alim Akbar, who on October 8 was shot and killed by police. Jihad was brandishing knife, cleavers, and hollering anti-gay and racist epithets in a crowded popular corner of the Castro, and then lunged at the officer who told him to drop the knives. Such a volatile situation, I can hardly blame the cop for bringing Mr. Akbar down, when any other option might likely have caused serious injury or even death to one or more bystanders, including the officer. With great disgust, I read that Akbar's family wants to sue the SFPD for the death of their insanely violent relative. Homophobia is homophobia, whether from a gay person or straight or any other. Sometimes the most violent gay bashers turn out to be closeted queers with major unresolved issues around their sexuality, like Dahmer and Gacy. Obviously, jihad is no exception, especially when coupled with the virulent stance his Muslim belief holds against homosexuality. How strange that his first name has turned out to be so tragically prophetic. Where is the shame in Mr. Akbar's surviving family and friends? Obviously, by what they said in your news article of October 24, he had a long history of mental disability and substance abuse and was prone to violent tantrums, so I certainly encourage a lawsuit against Akbar's family for allowing such a dangerous soul to mingle in the company of unsuspecting decent gay people and their friends who were hoping to find some sort of safe haven for maybe just a short while here in the heart of gay Mecca. Can the SFPD or the city sue them for such criminal lack of concern for permitting such a loon to run amok in our own gay neighborhoods? Can we residents of the Castro sue too? If so, count me in. Why didn't Akbar's, quote, friends either have him supervised in public by a responsible adult or contain him geographically within their immediate family and social circle where they can keep an eye on him? Akbar's friends go on to blame the drug problems of our queer community for Akbar's death. So not only do we queers get violently threatened to the point of terror by this jihad, but now we must suffer being the scapegoats for his family's smug and deceitful ploy. If I were a Christian zealot planting human bombs within the queer community, I could not have pulled off a better stunt than the scenario playing out around Mr. Akbar's demise. Make gay people look bad on top of all the other anti-gay media propaganda flooding our nation. There seems to be no concern for the damage upon our community that will surely come about from the hysterical lies of Akbar's comrades. How dare they blame gay people for the violent acts of a lunatic? Wasn't Mr. Akbar part of the problem by being a substance abuser himself? And aren't you, who are his immediate family and friends, largely responsible for not protecting the gay public from such a dangerous freak? How dare you think we gays are supposed to take all this crap that a heterocentric society dumps on us? I unequivocally support the officer who shot Mr. Akbar and will do everything one person can to defend him in court in any other way possible. I'd even like to see him win an award and a well-deserved 3-week vacation to anywhere in the world he wants, all expenses paid, both for him and his partner or spouse. For I believe, when all circumstances are considered, his swift action prevented likely severe harm to one or more people in the immediate area. And that story and the one before it were written by Ezekiel J. Kralin.